Call me old man Waves.
Damn you, old man!
Wait.
Old ass man.
Shut up, old man. You smell like fart.
No. Man.
Old man.
Wait. He's so old, he got a podcast on cassette.
Fuck, you're old.
Damn it, Wade.
And welcome to the Old Man Wade Show. I am your host, the God of Stubborn, the Lord of Laughter, the Sire of Sarcasm, the Scion of Cynicism, Old Man Wade. And I'm back again. I think this is your third time on the show. Tell everybody who you are.
Yeah, third time. Yeah, my name is Robert Wolkenbrod, and I'm back for more.
Yeah, more shenanigans. Oh, and it's funny because it seemed perfect with everything we're going to discuss today. It kind of was, I guess fortuitous would be the word. Because I was looking for topics, and it kind of seems that, like, with everything going on, it's like the same topic. Oh, like, you know, it's like, can we move away from that for a little while? And some stuff popped up, and I was like, oh. And actually, you hit me up, was like, hey, let me know when you want to record again. And then the Jordan doc came on, some stuff that's happened with the WWE, and all some other stuff is happening. So it worked out perfectly.
Yeah, there's been a lot, despite everything going on right now, there's still been a lot of interesting content coming out from the basketball and especially the wrestling side of the world here. I'm looking forward to diving into it.
Yeah, man. What was I say? So, what have you been up to, man? We've talked about it a few times, but you're not writing for Fanside. It haven't been for a while, and you have a new product. You have you're writing somewhere else new now.
So right now I'm writing for Forbes a little bit, even though they just reduced our workload a little bit due to everything going on. Fansided, I stopped Fansided in December, at least for being a site expert, but now I transitioned to a staff writer role with Hoops Habit, which is their general NBA website. I just started that, I think, 2 weeks ago. So I've written one article on Vince Carter and the Raptors. The Raptors are supposed to be my main MO thing. So I'm starting on that, and then I have a few projects on the side that are in the works right now.
And you got a YouTube thing going on too, right?
Sorry,
what was that? Unfortunately, there's a random fire truck going down the street.
Oh, jeez.
I was going to say, you have a YouTube thing going on as well, right?
Yes, YouTube. Yeah, I started that up in January. It was supposed to start on movies, but of course there's nothing coming out right now with movie content, really, besides the occasional Netflix thing. So now it's really transitioned a lot towards TV. And yeah, I've been leaning into that for the past, I'd say, 3 months, and now I'm working on a little video editing business on the side, and I haven't actually announced yet, but that's in the works right now.
Well, I'll let you know when we start doing, because me and my co-host, we were thinking about doing video, and when that starts, I'll definitely be hitting you up, because I don't know how to edit a video to save my life.
Sure, yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, I'm definitely down for it. I've got Adobe Premiere Pro. That's all I need.
So, actually, you know what I'm thinking about? How has it been trying to write for the NBA right now? Like, it seems like it would, like, ESPN is struggling because it seems like everything is, if it's not Tom Brady, it's LeBron James, not LeBron James, and it's the Dallas Cowboys. But I've noticed a lot of freelance writers in sites that aren't ESPN or Fox News, they've actually been a little more creative with stuff. How has it been for you?
So my strategy has been basically I'm extending the amount of off-season content I would put out because with the Spurs, they were in a position for the playoffs right now for my Forbes content. So I've been focusing on the draft. I've been looking a little bit at contract extensions, free agency, basically trying to stretch that out. I don't know how long I can stretch it out for, but yeah, I'm just trying to get whatever I can out of it. It's most I can do.
Yeah, completely understandable. But so, hey, let's get right into the shits. I'm going to talk about the Bulls doc. I actually have 30 minutes left in part 4, so I haven't finished it all the way, but I'm old enough to know the story, even though I'm catching a lot of things that I didn't know about. So before the doc started, what were you looking forward to?
I was looking forward to learning how the Bulls dynasty was in the 90s, just like how like the feeling around it was, because I was born in 94, so I I didn't see really any of it. I was too young to get into basketball at the time. So I have general knowledge, but now feel like I'm learning how everything really was back then. Like, I didn't know a lot about the Scottie Pippen contract situation. I knew about Dennis Rodman because that's just been publicized so much over the years. But I also didn't realize how big of an influence Jerry Krause was in the middle of this Bulls dynasty disintegrating, because after 1998, they were all gone. They were gone. So I've enjoyed learning more about that. Things I didn't know and things from, I guess, firsthand sources.
Well, it's funny for me, like, I heard about the Scottie Pippen, like, contract thing, but then again, this was before the internet became, like, huge, and no one knew, like, you know, you heard about it, but you're like, oh, it's urban legend, there's no real way to tell, and, like, unless you heard Scottie Pippen say it himself, which he doesn't do it often, you didn't know. But then you find out he wasn't even one of the 6 highest paid players on that team. It was like he's one of the best, he's probably one of the best, 5 power forwards ever played a game of basketball. He kind of got jerked, but in a sense, some of it was his own, fault.
Yeah, because if you look at it too, like at the beginning of this contract, they were explaining he wanted that financial security because they went to it how Nick had a brother and his father were both disabled in wheelchairs.
Yep.
So he wanted that financial security for his family, and that was at the very early part of his career in the early 90s. But then as it wore on, as these Bulls teams were going through, and as Michael Jordan was making $30 million a year, Scottie Pippen probably saw that and thought, oh, where's my piece of the pie? Because he was making... Well, I think the contract officially was 7 years, $18 million, that's today, even back then, that's pennies. It's pennies for these athletes.
For a guy who had a signature shoe. Wild. Signature shoe, everybody knew who he was. He was a all-star every year. It was odd. Until you said, like, that's pennies now. I think Eric Snow might have made $18 million in 7 years. But one of the things I do gotta say that I loved about it is, and just from me, I'm not a Phil Jackson fan. I've never been a Phil Jackson fan. I thought his coaching, let me just make this clear, I thought his coaching was overinflated. I thought him as a coach was just like, come on, man. Like, he's not even, I wouldn't even say he's top three. Like, Greg Popovich, I think, is the greatest coach of all time. But watching the documentary really allowed me to see what he did. You know what I mean? He managed those personalities maybe better than anybody could have. Like, you know what I mean? Dennis Rodman, Horace Grant, Tony Kukoc, Michael Jordan, Luke Longley, Bison Dele. Like, all these players, it's like none of them were the same. But he found a way to bring them all together. And even I got to the part where they started discussing Dennis Rodman after his Vegas thing, and I remember that. And then listening to how they connected and how he, like, kind of how him and Phil made it work, it was kind of inspiring. It was cool that, like, it was something that I got a more appreciation for him now, to make it all short.
Right, yeah, because, like, you see how he brought the team together through, like, yoga and all these creative ways, but I see what you mean. He seems like more of a guy who knew how to, bring these personalities together. He did it with the Lakers. He did it with Kobe and Shaq and all the other wild personalities that were there. So he has this way of, whether it's from any of, like, from being alive in, like, the 60s and 70s when he was doing all kinds of things, he found these spiritual ways of bringing people together. And, as we see now, like, his triangle offense that he really made famous, it didn't work well when he tried bringing it to the Knicks as the president of basketball operations. Like, it was a very hard thing to install. And maybe it's just the fact that it was Derek Fisher running in and whatnot, but you look back on those Bulls teams and, he had to just get everyone happy, copacetic, and, hey, if that's what leads to all these championships, good on him, but I do agree that there are better names out there, at least for the all-time coaching ranks. I do agree. But I would definitely put Phil, at least I would say, in like a top 8. I would say top 7.
I can see that.
Think that's fair?
Absolutely. So you're a Knicks fan, or you covered the Knicks for a while. Do you think it was a Phil Jackson thing? Was it a stubbornness of the players, or did the triangle offense? Because as someone who I used to play basketball way back when I was skinny, and I remember running the triangle offense, and it works. You know what I mean? But you have to have people that can distribute the ball and are willing to distribute the ball. I look at that Knicks team and look at Derek Fisher, and I just wasn't sure if that was necessarily the right fit. Carmelo Anthony is a capable passer, but I wouldn't call him a passer. You know what I mean? And who else on that? Like, I wouldn't even say their point guards were necessarily passers.
Yeah, it was a problem when Carmelo Anthony has never been known as that kind of player who can. He never really just made his teammates better, and it just seemed like you needed a star player or multiple stars in there that were going to make their teammates better. And yeah, Derek Fisher, I think it was a combination too. Derek Fisher just not being prepared for this, and it was the makeup of the team, because the team was already starting to go downhill in talent. Went after that, I think, Derek Fisher came in, I think it was in 2014 and 2015. And when he came in, the talent level was going down, players were getting old, and everything was just building up together. And from mismanagement of the team's assets, it just wasn't coming together well. And yeah, there was no way to replicate how it was with the Bulls and Lakers when Kobe, Shaq, Jordan, Pippen. Knicks had Carmelo Anthony, which was great, but I would put him below. Can I put him below? Maybe I would put him below Pippen. Maybe. I don't know that's a take, but
it's not. If we're talking about just pure offensive scoring, Carmelo Anthony is probably one of the 10 best scorers who can. He can pretty much do anything. But in terms of an overall player, he couldn't sniff Scottie Pippen's jockstrap.
Yeah, because I know there are, I mean, if you on Twitter, as we both of us have probably seen, there are wild Carmelo Anthony fans out there.
Oh yeah.
And who want to put him in this pantheon? And I he was a fantastic player. He's a fantastic scorer. I just had that problem over the years. Yeah, of him just being very one-sided in his game, and for a triangle offense with just him being that focus of it, it just didn't work. And yeah, the rest of the team had to fit it well, too. But he just wasn't that kind of player who was committed to making a system work. It was more about me, me, me. I want my money. I want my points. That was it.
So, you know, when you bring it up, and this is actually a great segue back to the documentary. Jordan initially didn't want to run a triangle offense either. He was like, and he actually said, he goes, I didn't like Phil Jackson because he took the offense away from going directly to him. And he even came along and, you know, and that, I think that was when he became a better player as opposed to just this offensive god, you know what I mean? So it's a funny comparison between the two, because if Carmelo Anthony would have bought into the system, maybe they could have been better, because, you know, Michael Jordan is, you know, who is anybody to tell him, no, I'm not going to run the offense, you know what I mean? I'll do whatever I want. I'm Michael Jordan. Who's going to stop me? But he realized it wasn't working.
Yeah. He realized it wasn't working. And, yeah, he bought in. And, yeah, of course, look where it took them. Yeah, and when you see someone like Michael Jordan buying in, then you get the rest of the team who follows along with it, from Scottie Pippen on to whether it was Horace Grant, Dennis Rodman, and so on. With the Knicks, yeah, you just – if Carmelo Anthony's not going to buy into it, the rest of that team is not buying into it. And, yeah, and it just was a sinking ship from there into this crater that they haven't been able to dig out of for the past 6-7 years now.
So now that you've seen the first, what are some takeaways that you would, what are some things you take away from what you've seen so far in the first four parts?
I would take away probably Scottie Pippen was my main takeaway, because I felt I learned the most about him. I didn't know that much about his contract situation or his family background. With Jordan, I guess my main takeaway with him is just learning. I never realized he was this candid to be able to talk about these things.
Oh, man.
Because he's been a very quiet athlete. For such a big name, he's been very quiet. And I thought it was fascinating to see him open up to this degree on all these stories and be so, I mean, he is the one who's behind this documentary, so of course he's got motivation to say things. But the fact that it's actually coming out now, and I love it. Because for my lifetime, Michael Jordan hasn't been a huge presence besides the failed Wizards run, and of course being the Charlotte Hornets owner, which he hasn't done a particularly great job at. To say the least.
What do you mean? He got Terry Rozier and gave away Kemba Walker.
Oh my God! What a trade-off! What a great trade-off!
You know one thing I didn't know, because I thought Jordan started putting on weight during his second three-peat run. I didn't know he started doing it to initially defeat to beat the Pistons. And I loved the explanation for it when he was just saying, "I wanted to hit them back." So when they started showing these plays, and it was like, yeah, like Bill Laimbeer couldn't knock him on his ass anymore. Like if he was gonna do it, like Jordan was going at him, and he was going at Dennis Rodman. He was going at like all these guys who wanted to hurt him. They said like, oh, we wanted to hurt him, and it stopped working. And when the infamous Dennis Rodman foul, and I love the explanation of it, like Scottie Pippen for the first time just didn't react. I loved it because I think was the moment where the tables turned and everything shifted into the Bulls' direction, because it was like, all right, well, we're not the high school seniors anymore beating up on the freshmen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're now older, stronger, and smarter. It's just like, well, what do we do now? And unfortunately, they didn't have an answer to everything that Chicago did. And in some senses, I'm wondering whether or not they got complacent. Because after they beat the Bulls, like they said, they went the next day, they was like, no, we're going to practice and we're going to make sure we beat them next year. I wonder if, because listening to Isaiah Thomas talk, he didn't seem like he considered the Bulls a threat. Because like they were running through the league the last couple of years, and what they say, I think the Bulls were the only team to beat them that year in the final, that year in the playoffs. It's like, you know, you kind of get arrogant, you kind of, that hubris starts to set in, and then next thing you know, here comes this team that's like they're gunning for you. It's almost it's similar to LeBron when he left Cleveland to go play in Miami, because that was the only way he was getting over Boston.
You know, it's kind of like they had a maturity period.
Yes.
Basically a maturity period, because, yeah, like you were just saying, LeBron, when he went to Miami, that felt like his moment of maturity. He grew up in those 4 years there. Michael Jordan and those Bulls teams had to grow up against the Pistons to become this championship force. And that, of course, led into their championships long live. LeBron had to do that, and then he went on to win the title in 2012, 13, and then 16. So, yeah, they had to go through this period of growth. And just what Michael Jordan, too, a theme of his career was, if he was going to get told or if there was something he couldn't do, he found a way to do it.
Yeah.
He found a way. He found a way to defeat the Pistons. He found a way to expand this game. He found a way to keep these teams relevant and adapt and, keep going until they were told not to keep going.
Yeah, it was all, you know what it was? There was, I was actually talking to a friend of mine, and we were talking about the thing that made Jordan better. And I think it was, there was a moment where, hold on. There's so many text messages in this thread, but I wish I could find it. But I forget who we were talking about, but someone said something to Michael Jordan, and I was like, oh, you guys are to blame for him being this dominant, because someone told him he couldn't do something, and then he was like, oh, fuck you. I'm going to do it now. And it's all your fault, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yep. He always, in a way, like, held these grudges. Like when we saw, like, or these things he just sets in his head. Like, oh, you told me this. Like, I'm gonna go prove you wrong. And we got that when he said he still hates Isaiah Thomas. And
I love it.
He still hates them. We're in 2020. Those series happened in 90, 91. I mean, we're going back over 30 years. The hatred to build up for that long, you don't see that anymore. You don't see that at all.
I don't know if you've ever... Have you watched the 30 for 30 on the Detroit Pistons?
Yes.
Watching that 30 for 30 and now watching this, it makes me nostalgic for those days of when players just, they just did not like people. It, like, there are certain players, like you get the Draymond Greens, you know, people who say what they want, but LeBron, Kawhi Leonard, those guys could play in any era. But as much as I love all of them, I'm not sure how they would react when the Detroit Pistons come into town or if they go to Detroit. You know what I mean? It's like, we don't like you, period. Like, LeBron keep going to the lane, and yeah, he's getting his points. But at some point, he's going to go, I'm tired of getting beat up by Rick Mahorn, who's averaging 5 points a game. And for some reason, somehow, he's averaging 8 fouls. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He was just one of those guys. Yeah. And, like, that whole idea of just, like, these players hating each other from back then. Like, now we get them who are, they're all sharing time in the AAU circuit together. Even in college too, they all get to know each other. They build this camaraderie and they hang out on the weekends together. So now, when they go and play the game, they just make it like, oh, I'm just going to work, and oh yeah, we'll go hang out afterwards. When we're off the clock, but there's no more grudges. There's no more personal rivalries. And while it's not a huge detraction to the games, it's still something where you as us fans, we miss that passion, that intensity. That intensity just goes up one little notch forward. I wish I had it, but maybe we'll get it one day. But I don't know. Right now, no.
I doubt it'll be like that. I think the last time we saw something like that, and again, I'm a Boston guy, so that's just me. But with like KG, Pierce, and Rondo, and their hatred for LeBron James. And it's funny, they didn't hate Dwayne Wade. They just hated LeBron James. And it's funny, it's like KG and Pierce, I know KG talked about it on All the Smoke with Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson, and he was like, he knows what it is. He knows. And I like that. I like that he's not, that KG, I think he was the last of like a dying breed of players who just didn't give a fuck. You know what I mean? He went in there and he said some outlandish shit to people. I don't know if you know the Tim Duncan story.
Not that I recall, no.
So it was Mother's Day. This, as the story was told, it was Mother's Day. Tim Duncan's mother has passed. And the way it was told was Tim Duncan's at the free throw line, hits the first free throw. Kevin Garnett then looks at Tim Duncan and goes, hey, happy fucking Mother's Day. I was like, Jesus. Like, look, I've said some horrific things playing basketball, but that was just, I was like, yeah, that's a bit much. You know what I mean? But
cold-blooded.
Yeah. But again, he played back in those days where it's like, I think his second year or his rookie year. No. He was playing when Michael Jordan was playing, because there's a story about him in Minnesota, again, on the All the Smoke podcast, and they were talking about this, and I guess J.R. Ryder was, like, busting the Bulls' ass, and KG was talking shit to Jordan, and Isaiah Ryder looked at him. No, excuse me. J.R. Ryder was saying to him, he was like, hey, he doesn't know any better, J.R. Ryder. And JR, yeah. He was looking at J.R. Ryder and going, oh, Isaiah, J.R. Ryder. Okay, same person. All right, so he was talking shit to him, and Isaiah Ryder looked at Jordan, and goes, hey, man, look, he doesn't know the rules. He knows how to do it. And so Jordan was like, oh, yeah? Okay, all right. He said they were up. I think he said they were up 15 and ended up losing by 20. And then so,
oh my God.
And I guess he was busting their ass, and so Jordan kept talking shit to KG, like, come on, young fella, let's go, come on, you, this is what you wanted, right?
And it's like, a moment like that just probably sticks for him after that.
Yeah, he said that was his favorite Jordan story. And it's funny because that's a moment where he's just kind of like, I think he takes that might have been the game where he developed that mentality of, if you want to be the best, then you have to, like, you got to put that energy out there. You got to have that meanness. And Kevin Garnett was mean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, mean, confident. Yeah, he was dominant.
But, So yeah, so what are you looking? So I didn't realize we were going to talk this much about the documentary, but it's perfect. What are you looking forward to next? Like, for me, I want to know if they're going to tell the truth about the flu game.
Cause, oh, that'd be interesting because we there's a lot of theories on it over the years. Yeah,
the food poisoning. You come to find out he was hungover.
Oh, I hope they elaborate on that. Oh, that would be great. Maybe down like maybe in one of the last few episodes. Maybe that would be cool.
But here's my thing. I don't know if
you've been forward to.
I don't know if you've ever been really hungover, but I don't know what's worse: playing hungover or having the flu.
Oh my god. Oh, I had the flu a long time ago, but I was hungover most recently, so I don't know. That's tough. That's a tough one.
My wife's on the computer, and she just goes, probably hungover. But not like it's just. But it's like, but either way, it's like, you know, it's. I guess it's more not proper. I don't think it's the right word I'm looking for. But I guess it's more acceptable to say that he had a flu game as opposed to he was out gambling and partying and drinking until like 10 a.m. when he had a game at 6.
Yeah, seriously.
But either way, man, it was dope. Regardless of how it goes, man, it was definitely dope. But yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to. What's something that you want to see?
I'm looking forward to the inevitable day they're going to talk about, where it's like their last day together and how they're all going to be reacting to it. I guess after they're going to show the championship in 1998. So I want to get like that feeling, that reaction, like, oh my God, is this really the end? Like are we really just going to let this go? Are we going to get any video of like Jerry Krause talking to everyone, let's say after a championship, or Jerry Reinsdorf saying like, okay, this is definitely the end, have a nice day. I really want to get a look at that, especially because it's focused around how they're wanting to get rid of Phil Jackson after the season, no matter what. So I'm curious about those conversations, and I hope we get some candid looks at what they're going to be saying. I would imagine that would come by the last episode.
I hope so, because that's a really good point, because like you said, eventually the ride ends, and as we know, like, you know, the shot. And I also wonder if they're going to talk about the steal, because as great as the shot was, I think it was Scottie Pippen who got a big steal towards the end to like seal the deal. Cause I know he gets the steal, Tony Kukoc catches it and gets the dunk, and that puts him, I think, up 4, or that might have ended the game. I can't remember which one it was, but that's a really important part of that story as well. Not just the shot, but the actual steal. And it's funny because I used to play defense. That was my thing. But for me, as great as the shot was, that steal was, I think, was the most important part. But now you have to wonder, like, are they going to get into? Granted, it's not a Bulls thing. Are they going to talk about Scottie Pippen with the Trailblazers? Are they going to discuss Dennis Rodman's short stint with the Lakers and the Dallas Mavericks, or Jordan when he was with the Pistons, the Wizards? Are these things they're going to discuss? And I also want to know if they're going to talk about the Dream Team practice, the one that we've never seen. When they were like, they had like clips of it, but they talked about how they were like, it was like, I forget the roster, but it was a 5-on-5, and they were like going at each other, and it was like the best game you've never seen.
Maybe that will be coming up. If anything, maybe next episode, maybe.
Yeah.
With how the timeline they're putting everything right now, maybe this would be it, or maybe by the next episode after that. It seems like with the way how they're playing it out from the early 90s and on. Yeah.
I also got to give them a lot of props for the way they've done it, because a lot of times when you're bouncing from the present to the past, the future to the past, and then back to what's going on, sometimes it gets a little jumbled. But the way it was edited, it worked, because it never really seemed jumpy or scattered. It all flowed into everything perfectly. I admired the editing job, which I don't think a lot of people are giving credit to.
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah, it's seamless, and yeah, it makes it even more enjoyable. I love it.
All right. Any last thoughts on the Jordan documentary?
I'm really excited for the next two episodes, and I'm excited for it to carry on for the next, what we got 3 weeks left of it. So It's must-see TV. It's the very rare piece of must-see TV we have right now, so I'm taking it all in. Same thing with the fact that we got no sports right now, so I'm taking it all in, not taking it for granted, and just enjoying the ride and hoping to learn more of things that we don't know.
All right, so we got a topic you brought up that I thought it would be a good idea for you to actually lead into and talk about. So why don't you get into that?
Sure. So now there's a recent report now of the NBA considering Disney World as an option if they return for the season. They apparently, according to the article I was looking at, I think it was through the Orlando Sentinel, that the NBA Board of Commissioners or Board of Governors spoke to Disney CEO Bob Iger about potentially setting it up, because Disney has, I believe, 255 acres that they can let the NBA use for a combination of housing, arenas. I think there's three or four different basketball courts that they can use that are already set for broadcasting too. So it's an idea, or it's a potential idea that was kind of speculated about through a few articles over the past couple weeks, but now this is the first concrete proof the NBA is looking into this. Frankly, I think it's their best idea they have.
Do you think so? I have thoughts on it. First off, of course, Florida. second off, do you think this is a good idea to even continue the NBA season? Not from a financially, for everybody who's involved with like the NBA, whether it be like writers, players, cameramen, everyone else involved in it, it would be a decent idea because now they have they're getting paid. But from a standpoint of humanity, do you think this is a good idea for them to even be playing?
No. Same thing goes for every sport. And just because it's not a good idea doesn't mean it's not going to happen. I do think some of these sports leagues are gonna come back in some way. It's just that no idea is going to be perfect, and they're all going to be flawed. Because you're looking at this situation with you're going to house if they're going to restart the regular season and not jump into the playoffs, you're going to be housing 30 teams. 30 teams of about 15 players each. All the coaching staff, all, let's say hypothetically, executives are down there, broadcasters, Disney park officials that have to be there. You're looking at all these people, how are you going to contain all of them from potentially getting outside the park, from, let's say, when they have to have food delivered inside, is someone from the outside going to come in and potentially infect someone inadvertently? Then you're going to have one case that can spread to however many hundreds or perhaps maybe 1,000 or two people that are there. It's not perfect, but it's still one of the best things they can do, which it's still not great, but yeah.
And I remember somebody at my job saying that you're negative until you're not. You know what I mean? Because there have been cases where people have tested negative and then come back positive. Like, you know what I mean? So they could test every player, person that's going into there, and they could go, we've done all the extensive testing, and everyone tested negative. And then within a week, we find out, or even days, we find out that someone did contract it. Or, like, to your point, what happens when you have to have food delivered? What happens when, what if someone, which always happens, is always have one person at least who breaks that rule and does something not supposed to do. They go, well, the idea that, like, it can't be me. I won't be the one to catch it. And they go out somewhere and they bring someone home or bring someone to the hotel who has the virus, or they touch the wrong thing and nothing's 100%. So it seems selfish, and I wouldn't say selfish because I can understand people wanting to get paid. But I also feel that there's a bigger picture to look at, you know what I mean? So I think irresponsible would be the best word for it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially when you have these NBA owners who are billionaires. And I saw this post and it was completely accurate, and it goes, why are the NBA millionaires the one paying for the employees who aren't paying when the billionaires have like quadruple the money that these players have? Like, you know what I mean? Like Kevin Love, I think, was one of the first people to step up and start donating his salary to the is the Quicken Loan Arena.
Yeah.
So it was like just from like I was like, oh, that's cool that I think Steph Curry stepped up and all these other players are doing. It's like, yeah, but they're billionaires. Like, you know what I mean? So, but back to the whole idea of, because that's a whole different story. I'm trying to avoid talking about that. So, there's also the idea that they're going to do a tournament, I guess, with all 30 teams, or I guess, I don't know how that would work out. Do you know about their idea?
Yeah, I saw that thrown around there, and I don't love that, because I don't love the idea of possibly rewarding a team that was horrible in the regular season, because the regular season was probably about 75% done.
Yes.
I think they had about 60-something games played. And if you're going to throw the team like the Knicks or the Hawks or the Cavs in there, and you're going to give them a chance at the championship, I don't like that at all. I would close the regular season. I would say that's it. I would go into the playoffs, and I would maybe shorten up the series a little bit, like do the regular 8 teams on each side that we're already in, and make it like, let's say, 3 games for the first round. Maybe go best of 5 for the second round, and so on. But 30 teams playing for the title like that? Nah, I don't like it. And one other thing too, I want to mention from a point you brought up about all the food and whatnot, how it takes up one player. What about the fact that Florida beaches are open too? Now I know Orlando's in the center of the state, which it's kind of far from the coastlines, but there could be a couple days between games.
Yeah.
You never know, because Florida is loose cannon right now with these beaches, and there are people everywhere floating around there. So.
And you know it's going to be that person who's going to go, well, the beaches are open, we should probably all go. And they'll go, they'll pay someone an X amount of money to go out in the middle of the night, and they'll go all hang out, and there it happens. So I'm looking at the standings right now. And one of the things that cracks me up, and it's, let's say you bring in all 30 teams, just for shits and giggles, right? And you have a team like, let's say, the Golden State Warriors. Klay Thompson's now healthy. Steph Curry's now healthy. Andrew Wiggins is playing. Draymond Green is playing. The Golden State Warriors are the worst team in the league at 15-50. Imagine if they won the tournament.
Yeah, they would be rewarded just like the Nets would be. They would be rewarded for these players sitting out. It's just so flawed if they did that, and they would just... It would be mind-boggling and just dumb. I think that word is the right word, but it would just be a silly thing to do to give these teams that would never have a chance in the title by any stretch of the imagination a realistic chance of being NBA champions for this weird season.
Yeah, so I'm looking at where it is now, and granted, in the Eastern Conference, it's kind of weird. Like you can count out Cleveland, Atlanta, Detroit, New York, Chicago, right? You can count those teams out. Charlotte, small chance in hell. Washington, they can sneak in. They're only 5.5 games behind Orlando. And as we know, Orlando could slip out, you know, because they're Orlando. Brooklyn, something could happen. Kyrie. And even Philadelphia is in the 6th spot. Like, you know what I mean? Those teams could change dramatically. You know what I mean? And looking at the West, like, well, we don't even need to get into that. Portland always somehow, some way, Damian Lillard finds a way to bully his way into the playoffs, no matter how bad they are during the regular season. New Orleans starting to play a little bit better. Sacramento, I think, is a wild card because they're iffy. But you know who's the biggest winner out of all this? San Antonio. Because if they don't do this season, then that means their streak of making the playoffs still continues.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, I've been writing about that for some of my past few articles, like how this is the end of their long run. But if the NBA does decide to do this, then yeah, it continues. Miraculously continues.
Imagine that. What if Greg Popovich coaches them into a championship? It's like, it's almost like the first championship Tim Duncan won in that shortened season. It's like, Like, he doesn't, like, Popovich doesn't get it. Takes advantage of a bad situation, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, and the fact, too, that this might be the worst team that Greg Popovich has had since before Tim Duncan and Kate was drafted. It really wasn't that good of a team, but if they get hot, and with Popovich knowing what he knows and how great the coach he is, you never know. You never know.
You don't. Like, imagine Rudy Gay gets hot for about 6 games straight. LaMarcus Aldridge decides to not play soft for the rest of the season. You know what I mean? Like, these are possibilities, man. Like, so it's, anything can happen, man. You're putting people in a very NFL playoff situation where anything can happen in one game. Hell, what's the dude in Trae Young? It's not Trae Young. What's the dude who plays in Atlanta? I can't remember his name.
Yeah, Trae Young.
Imagine Trae Young gets hot. That dude is fierce. He has ice in his veins. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so he could get hot and start dominating. He could score 50 a game for like 3 weeks. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Same thing like you were saying, the Warriors. You throw in, if Klay is healthy and Steph Curry was healthy, and Steph Curry got healthy before this all happened, you throw them in there, and yeah, I mean, they could easily win it all. Why not? Why the heck not?
Yeah, it's so wild, man, because there just seems a lot wrong with it, but I also kind of feel that, like, there's pressure to the higher-ups. Like, well, you guys have this ESPN and TNT contract. You're going to give us some games. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're going to find a way. And like I said before, it's going to be flawed. It's not going to be – there's no way it can be perfect. But they'll probably end up finding a way. Same thing, like the MLB will probably find a way. Maybe perhaps the NHL finds a way at some point too. So it's going to – yeah, because even like NASCAR is, I'm not a NASCAR fan, but I saw like NASCAR is coming back in 2.5 weeks. They're finding a way.
But, and it's funny, I was actually debating with a buddy of mine about whether or not they're going to start doing, whether or not the NFL is going to take place. And I said, there's no way the NFL should play it. Of all the games that could be played, football should be the one that is definitely like, no, you should not be playing this right now.
In a 53-man rosters on each team, and with their huge coaching staffs, you're counting on a couple. You're counting on, I don't know how many people, a couple thousand.
And it seems like a horrible, horrible idea. And it's like they're gonna play. It's like, oh, they play in empty arenas. That's not gonna work. Like the NFL, and it's like, you know they're going to, because if they don't give a shit about CTE, they don't give a shit about the COVID virus.
Yeah, and the NFL has been trying throughout all this to act like they're trying to go business as usual here, thinking nothing's going to happen. Because right now, I even saw a report today, too, that if with the college football season potentially being canceled, they might just take Saturdays and air their games. The NFL thinks they're going to happen. Maybe if they get delayed, I think at least they're going to get delayed through September. But they think they're going to go on, like the show's just going to go on. And I think that's, and they kind of have that mindset too with the draft, like how they just kept the draft the same thing, even though others pushed for it to get a move. They're going to go full speed ahead. I think that's silly.
Can you imagine them still trying to play? What is it? The NFL's with 18 games.
I think they pushed it to teams going 17 games because they had 17 weeks, but teams played 16 games. I think it would go 17 weeks and then, or 18 weeks, and they would play 17 games.
Can you imagine them trying to like play all those games in a shortened season? It's like, hey, we're gonna play on Monday. They're gonna have you guys play on Saturday.
It's like so silly. Oh man, I hope they don't be irrational, but the NFL, they're gonna be irrational.
The NFL, we're irrational.
I like that slogan for the season.
I'm actually going to write that down. I was looking for a title. I think that's going to be it. So I was going to start talking about the... Will you stop? I was going to start talking about the WWE, but it was actually kind of funny because both of us have kind of like checked out. And I know you're a fan of like the WWE, which is weird that you've checked out just like I have.
Yeah, because I mean, I watched New WrestleMania a couple weeks ago. I watched, I think, the Raw or SmackDown afterwards, but then all these releases started, and then all these reports started coming out about how WWE or Vince McMahon, I should say, spoke to, I think it was the local government there. He got sports and entertainment there to be deemed essential when a professional wrestling TV show, is that essential? No. So that, and just how everything proceeded, it just left such a bad taste in my mouth to the fact that I'm not gonna watch Raw and SmackDown right now. I'm gonna watch Money in the Bank probably. I because it's just, pay-per-views are big deals, so I want to see what's going to happen there. But I'm not investing 5 hours a week in their televised shows anymore. Not until things change. Not until they're going to go about this smartly. Even though, yeah, I'm going to see the pay-per-views, but mostly because I'm paying $9.99 for WWE Network right now. But and that's a whole other thing too, because I want to cancel. But yeah, it's not great right now. WWE, it's not great.
I was actually having a conversation with a few people about, like, you know, if I still watch WWE. And it's like, I follow a lot of it on Twitter, so Monday and Friday, I wait till Instagram pop, wait till the show ends. I pop up on Instagram, see what I missed, hop on Twitter, see the things that I, like, may have missed, and do the same thing with YouTube. And my best friend, he covers it, so if I miss anything, he'll send me a link to go, oh, check this out. And it was just, but like you said, with the, and don't even get me started on the Saudi Arabia thing.
oh, yeah, that's a whole other thing, too.
But the cuts were one thing, and I actually enjoyed some of the, let me just say, I really, really enjoyed WrestleMania. It may have been one of my favorite WrestleManias in recent history, and the fact that there was no crowd, I think, made it a little bit better, because you could actually see, I guess, the passion and the want to put on a good show from the wrestlers, because they weren't depending on the crowd. Because, you know, sometimes a really bad crowd can make a really good match terrible. You know what I mean? They start chanting random things that don't matter. They start booing, even though the match is really good. But this WrestleMania, it was good. It was entertaining. And then, who knows if we would have got that gem of a match from AJ Styles and The Undertaker if they were doing a live event. So,
yeah, it brought out those cinematic matches out of them, which I love them. Yeah.
Yeah, like that John Cena Bray Wyatt thing, I think, went on 3 minutes too long, but I was in tears laughing at how funny it was. And like John Cena just kind of embraced it too. Like he didn't, you know how some people you can tell when they're like they're doing something they don't want to do? Like yep. Cena looked like he enjoyed every single minute of it, and then Bray Wyatt kind of like matched that energy too. And it was a perfect way for him to defeat him. And it was like, oh, so this was good. Granted, the Edge-Orton match may have gone on 10 minutes too long. But for the most part, it was fun. And to your point about watching wrestling, it's like I check in and out, like I said. I'm going to watch Money in the Bank with my best friend. Like, he's going to be covering it. We'll FaceTime. We'll watch it. We'll make fun of it. We'll enjoy it. You know what I mean? But I don't have the same kind of, like, need to watch it anymore. You know what I mean? And I have Hulu. I could watch it the next day. I just don't care enough.
Yeah, it's just, I kind of felt like, at least for me, it was kind of falling that way a little bit, even before all the coronavirus stuff started. I just, like of course, like, the last time I was on here, I had that whole rant on Seth Rollins and that Bray Wyatt match, which frustrated the hell out of me. But yeah, it just felt like, just the build-up along the way, just I wasn't feeling with WWE anymore. I still watched, but then when Vince McMahon started making all these cuts, and the fact he was doing these very publicly shady business practices, putting his talent in jeopardy with their health, and then actually having a talent go to, I think, a local Florida court and make a public complaint that they were being forced to work. All that built up, And the fact that these shows on Raw and SmackDown just haven't particularly been good, even with all this going on. So I'm just like, why am I watching this? Why am I investing my time right now? I can invest it in a show I can go watch on Netflix that I haven't seen yet. Or I can go watch a movie that I wanted to see for a long time. Or I can go work on one of the projects I was saying before.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I want to put my time to things, other things that just aren't going to make me feel so down, like watching WWE. And I do watch AEW, too. I love AEW. I've been following that every week. But WWE right now, I'm just not feeling it.
And you know what's in all of the, and it's you gotta feel bad for anybody who gets released, except for the people who wanted to be cut. Like the there was a tag team that couldn't wait to get released. They were screaming like, please let us go, we don't wanna be here.
Oh, the Revival. Yeah.
Yes, they're like, please let us go, we don't wanna be here. So bully for them. I don't know Rusev's feeling on it, but he kind of didn't seem like he really gave a shit. But I felt bad for him because it's like someone tweeted that they left more money on the table not pushing Rusev than they have in the past 20 years. Rusev was a fucking star from day one. When him and Lana were together, he was gold. And granted, that one of my favorite titles is Cuck Angle. So like, like that angle was weird and stupid, but it was fun. Like, you know what I mean? Because Rusev is Rusev. He's gonna be great regardless. And then Rusev Day, like, who didn't love Rusev Day? Like, you know what I mean? And it was like, and it's like, how do you not put the title on him ever? Like, you know what I mean? It's like he was one of the most talented people they had. And then putting him with English, oh my god. It was a match made in heaven. Like, you have a manager who can wrestle, who doesn't mind taking the hits, who can be his mouthpiece even though Rusev can talk, and then Rusev's playing off of him as well, being just as goofy. Like, I remember, I forget who the backstage interviewer was, and they were talking, and Rusev got pissed off, and then he found out that they were gonna be in a tag team title match. He jumped in, and it's Rusev Day, and I was like, this is amazing. And it's like, and then it's like, and he's released.
See, the problem with it is that WWE didn't plan on it. And WWE hates things happening that are good that they do not plan on happening. If someone is getting a lot of momentum with the crowd that they were never planning on, they shut it down. You see that, you saw it with Rusev. You see, in the opposite end of the spectrum is Roman Reigns, who was still not fully over with the crowd, but yet WWE kept pushing him because that was their plan. Yeah. Rusev was never the plan. He was always the plan to be this mid-card guy who turned Rusev Day into this whole thing that made him a babyface star, or should have made him a babyface star. And they just took the air out of that balloon so many times, to the point where it was just like, are you rooting for this guy to fail?
Yeah.
Are you rooting for your own company to fail? Like, I just don't get that, because the common complaint over the past 15 years or so, since Stone Cold and The Rock have been gone, is WWE's inability to make a new star. Maybe Rusev wasn't the elite guy to go carry a card, but give him a chance to do something. Give him a world title run. Let him play with it. Let him go forward. And he never got that proper opportunity, which was disappointing.
You know what's funny? And it's like, you bring up a really good point. It's like, in the 80s and 90s, they had Hogan. Towards the end of the 90s, they had The Rock, Stone Cold. Shit, The Rock, Stone Cold, The Undertaker. All guys who could... The Rock and Stone Cold, they were both in movies. People loved them. They were pop culture phenomenons before pop culture phenomenons were a thing. Same thing with The Undertaker. Same thing with Ric Flair. John Cena popped up, who I think is probably one of the three greatest wrestlers, sports entertainers of all time. And since John Cena left, they have been struggling to find that guy. You know what I mean? And I feel like they missed the boat a few times. Like, I'm a big Dean Ambrose guy. I'm not going to say he's the best in-ring performer, but when he was on, the fans loved him. And he didn't even have to speak much. He's just, his aura around him just seemed perfect. When Roman Reigns is allowed to be himself, he's aces. When he's allowed to show his real personality, he's great. And it's funny, Tamina, she's been doing these little random vignettes on Instagram about, like, her, like, dealing with her anger issues. And I'm like, oh my god, how are we just getting to the point where we realize she's entertaining? Like, you know what I mean? She's been this stoic-faced, angry, like, not-speaking person. It's like, so you guys wasted about 10 years of her for what? You know what I mean? So it's like, but back to the original point, it's like, they don't have anybody who has that same kind of movie and TV show appeal that The Rock, Stone Cold, John Cena, and hell, even The Big Show have. Like, you know what I mean? They don't have anybody like that anymore. And I think they're reaching for something that is like trying to push a square peg in a round hole. It's just not going to work. Like, you know, or like, it's like Tetris. Wait for the straight piece to fall before you can actually, before you make a mistake and ruin a person's career. Rusev could have been that guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he could have been that guy. Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm not saying he would have gone on to be like a blockbuster movie star, Rusev, but like, you know, he could have easily led the company. Like, Rusev Day shirts were flying. Like, I remember trying to go find them, and I was like, damn, I can't find them in my fucking size. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was mediums, and that's it. Like, I couldn't even get smalls. Like, you know what I mean? It was. They're missing the point with all this. People hated, like, oh, the Kofi Kingston run was terrible. I'm like, yeah, but he made the company money. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he did. Oh, yeah, with all those New Day shirts they put out. Oh, yeah, they did.
Oh, my God. And I don't know if you listen to New Day's podcast, but they were discussing how when they started, a lot of wrestlers, including The Big Show, said, this is a stupid idea. It will never work. And then The Big Show was the only person who went to them and said, hey, I was wrong. Like, you know what I mean? So it's big for someone like him to go to admit that he was wrong. But I don't know. Times change. Becky Lynch isn't that star. And one of my friends made a valid point. When I was a big Becky Lynch fan. And he wonders whether we overestimated how good she was.
Yeah. Becky Lynch, they've really strapped the rocket to her now. It's been over a year now. And they're kind of doing to her what they did to the male side of the equation a little bit. Yeah, and I guess maybe more, a little bit more of an expansive thing on the women's side here, because Charlotte has been pushed every day she's been on TV.
Yeah.
But Becky Lynch, it's been going on for a little over a year now. The women's division has stalled in that time, which I think is a problem. She's not helping. She's credentialed, she's established and everything, and that women's division has just hit a stalemate. There's just no one coming about, and they're keeping Becky in this spot, and she's great as a chaser. She's great as a title chaser. You keep her in that underdog babyface role and let her hang around there, great. But now, as this rock-solid champion, it puts you to sleep. It unfortunately puts you to sleep, which is a shame. And in that time, they could have used that to build up women that aren't members of the Four Horsewomen, and they haven't done it.
And probably my favorite wrestler right now is Shayna Baszler. Like, she is just she scares me more than Brock Lesnar does. My buddy goes, "Yeah, Brock Lesnar will beat you. Shayna Baszler will break your damn arm." But it's like Shayna Baszler, Asuka, Bianca Belair. It's like those three right there. Like, they could dominate wrestling just with those three alone. And I'm pretty sure what's her name? I'm mad. I can't remember her name. NXT, short hair, Australian.
Dakota Kai.
Rhea Ripley.
Rhea Ripley. Okay,
like, she's amazing. And it was funny. Like, I'm pretty sure you remember her from the Mae Young Classic. Like, how good she's gotten in a short amount of time. There's a Toni Storm who continues to improve. So, like, it's not like that's the worst part about it. It's not as if they don't have those wrestlers who can't, those female wrestlers or women wrestlers who can't do it. It's like, I love Bayley. She can keep that title forever because she continues to be entertaining. But when she loses it, it's not going to hurt her. You know what I mean? She can continue to do everything she's doing because she's almost like Chris Jericho in a sense. You know what I mean? She even cut her hair. Like, you know what I mean? They both have this very, I hate everybody, and even though I hate everybody, you know you love me kind of vibe to her. And she's adopted that and thrown it on like social media, and it's even better. So she's evolved. Sasha Banks is Sasha Banks. So I completely feel like there's nothing she can't do. Charlotte, she's... And it's funny, Charlotte was one of the best wrestlers for a while, and she continues to improve. She continues to put her opponents over. But to your point again, it's always those four. It's always the four horsewomen when you have all these others out there who could be taking a reign. Like, people love Shayna Baszler. And some people complain that she dominated the Elimination Chamber, but it was like, nah, she was supposed to. Like that's what they do. Like, Asuka did the same thing when she came in. Charlotte kind of did something similar. Like, it's supposed to happen like this. If you're going to make someone look big and powerful and strong, do it. And then they drop the ball and have her lose to this, like, bullshit-ass finish. It was like, ugh.
Yeah, and now the air has been gone from her push now, I think ever since, from what I've seen. But, yeah, I wish she was pushed forward more. I wish... when you brought up her name, it made me just realize my biggest problem at WrestleMania, when Rhea Ripley lost her title to Charlotte.
Yeah.
That angered me at the time, because my idea at first was, okay, Charlotte is just going to, she's on NXT for a few times, she's going to give the show to Rob, she's going to put Rhea Ripley over, great. They have Charlotte win the title?
For what?
Does the show need it? Does that division need it when it has so many talented women? Absolutely not. And now Rhea Ripley had stalled a little bit because they made her this cookie-cutter babyface like they do with everyone else, and she lost her edge, which sucks. And I think that's more of a problem with WWE's production and how they micromanage everything. I think that's more of a problem towards that. But the fact that she lost her title to Charlotte was... I think damaging. It made her look a little worse to me in my eye. And I was like, why does Charlotte need the title? Why does Ripley need to lose it to her? If it was to Bianca Belair or someone else, sure, okay. You're keeping it inside that women's division. You're establishing other faces there. But the fact that she lost it at WrestleMania, the biggest stage, where in a time like this there's even more eyes on it, it's just like, really?
It was almost like an outsider came in and was like, yes, it's like the whole, like, the idea that Charlotte was one of the originals. And it's like, yeah, but does she really, like, her winning the title, what did it do? Like, you know what I mean? She could still stay in NXT and still win matches and still put people over. But it's like, and then she beat Mayhem Wednesday. It's like, okay, what was even the point of putting her in the match? It's like, I feel they put certain people in these matches with others to lose, like Rhea Ripley beating Bianca Belair, cool. It was a phenomenal match, and it made sense for her to go into WrestleMania strong. Like, I dig that. That makes sense to me. But then, not only did she lose, didn't she tap as well?
Yeah. It's like she tapped out. Yeah, that's just even worse.
WrestleMania itself was good. I had some issues with some of the finales and things like that, but for the most part, it was good. But then, like, you bring up how they're ruining people. I fear that they're going to destroy Aleister Black's career.
And he seems like that rising guy right now. That we've seen this before. We've seen it with Rusev before, too. These talented guys who are early in their career still, they're rising up. And WWE is going to say... No. That pause button.
Then they go, or
they stay like this. They don't go up. I should say, this is the podcast, but they stay even.
Yeah.
They don't go up, they go down, or they don't do anything.
You're 100% right, and it's like, because Aleister Black, I don't know what it is about. I remember the first time I saw him, I'm like, Jesus Christ, this dude is good. And then his finishing move is very similar to, like, Sweet Chin Music, where when you see it hit, you're like, yeah, that could knock somebody out. And it's like, and I know they probably want to avoid putting him with Zelina Vega, even though they're married, and I think it would be a great idea. But it's like, you know what it is? He's very Rob Van Dam-ish. Rob Van Dam didn't need to talk to be popular. He didn't need to talk to be a fan favorite. He would just show up in the ring, do the three thumb things, and with Aleister Black, he just comes in the ring, sits with his legs folded, gets up and just starts beating the shit out of people. You know what I mean? And it's funny because let's say he had a feud with Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins would come down, he'd talk and tell him how he's... And first off, I love the Monday Night Raw Messiah thing. I think it's one of the best things he's ever done. But like he'd come down, he'd talk about the Monday Night Messiah and call him like... And it's like I can already picture him saying like he's Jesus and like Aleister Black is like Satan. And then Aleister Black just kicks him in the face. You know what I mean? It's like it writes itself. But because Aleister Black doesn't, he's very Chris Benoit-ish and Rob Van Damme-ish, where he doesn't really need to talk. And granted, Chris Benoit, he was more charismatic than people gave him credit for when he actually could get on a microphone. But I feel like they're gonna ruin him, man. Like I think especially now with NXT having its own day and having its own show, I think it was a mistake moving him.
Yeah, because now because you, like so many other guys there, that he risks becoming just one of the guys, especially after Money in the Bank now that he's going to be involved in now. It puts his character in danger, which sucks. And I'm sure we're not the only ones who think that, because it just happened so many times before that, okay. It's just, he's looking great, but it's just a matter of time before the wind's taken out of his sail, which sucks. It sucks. I hope that's not the case here. I so cross my fingers and so hope that's not the case. But my expectations are they're I hate being so negative about WWE too, but everything that's just going on right now with their character buildup and everything going on, there's nothing for me to get really excited for, and this is just one of those things, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It really is, but I kind of feel, and I'm hoping that because Triple H seemed to really have a grasp on things with NXT, like he knew the stars to push, he knew how to like motivate them, like you know what I mean. Like there were people who you'd never think would be that good, and they're good. Like look at the Street Profits, like they are entertaining as fuck. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're great. The Viking Warriors, when they were at NXT, they were fun. I don't know what the hell happened to, Nikki Cross. Like you know, she's still crazy, I guess, but it just doesn't have the same kind of, feeling to it. You know what I mean? It's almost like whenever someone goes, because there really is no main roster anymore, I guess, but it feels like whenever someone goes to, like, Raw SmackDown, it's like, it kind of takes it away. Like, Keith Lee, he should never leave NXT. He's perfect where he is. Same thing with Mia Yim. And, Bianca Belair will be fine. Like, she's charismatic enough. The Street Profits, they'll be fine. Who else? Asuka, like, she's reinvented herself. And I'm so glad that she's developed this, like, wacky personality but still been, like, incredibly dominant. Io Shirai, she'll probably come to the main roster and she could be fine. If Rhea Ripley comes in, she'll be great. But there are just certain people when you look at it and you're like, nah. And it's not even because it's a smaller stage, quote unquote. It's almost like some things just fit perfectly. Like there are certain vibes with Raw and there's certain vibes with SmackDown where certain wrestlers don't work. But the Big Show always work. Big Show can work either roster. Kane can work either roster. Roman Reigns seems better on SmackDown. Like, you know what I mean? He doesn't necessarily have to talk as much, but when he does, it's fun. Daniel Bryanson works better on SmackDown because he's a wrestler. And when he talks, it's fun. The audience who goes to see SmackDown, they want to see wrestling. Raw is the telenovela of wrestling. Seth Rollins works great there. What's the other dude? The champion now.
Drew McIntyre.
He works better on Raw. The Miz and Morrison, they probably work better on Raw. I don't know why they're on SmackDown. Like, you know what I mean? So certain wrestlers work better on certain rosters. And I think NXT is also showing that some wrestlers are better there because it's a different style. Even the commentary is different. It's almost like Ring of Honor. As a matter of fact, Nigel, I forget his last name.
Nigel McGuinness.
I saw him a few times in... at the Reggie Lewis Center here in Boston. And me and my buddy kept calling him Nigel St. Nigel. But, but like, Nigel McGuinness, like, he's just a different kind of announcer. So everything on NXT kind of fits the characters and the personnel that they have. And so I think it's a mistake kind of moving people either too soon or moving them at all. Like, if they move Rhea Ripley to SmackDown, that would probably work. You move Mia Yim to SmackDown, it would work, but she's going to get lost, as opposed to her being on NXT, where she's always a star. You know what I mean? She can lose the next 40 matches, and people will still love her.
Yeah. It's so easy for them to get lost when originally these rosters were so big before the talent cuts and whatnot. A guy who I'm forgetting, who was EC3, for example. Take someone like EC3 here, who was called up probably too soon and probably was best for NXT at the time.
Yes.
And it was before NXT went live too. And then look where he went. He went nowhere. You get so many people who are just like, please keep them in NXT. Like, it's just a better situation for them. Frankly, it was probably a little better for someone like Ricochet or whatnot. And now look where they are. And yeah, sure, some of them have thrived in their situations. Some of them, like how you explain when Daniel Bryan is great on SmackDown here. He's fit for that role. Seth Rollins is fit for Raw. And there's NXT people who are fit for either show too, whether we're looking at it from the past, present, or future and whatnot. But just the fact that you know there's a chance they're going to get lost in there somewhere, because it's just WWE just has, or I should say Vince McMahon, such a quick trigger on some of these people here, and they can get lost within 2 weeks of showing up on Raw or SmackDown, which is a shame, and that's pretty much what happened to EC3. That's what happened to plenty of other people before him and after him.
Is EC3 still on the roster, or was he one of the ones that go?
He got cut, yeah.
And which it's funny, because I started following him on Instagram, and I'm like, oh, he is definitely AEW bound. There is no doubt in my mind. And he'll probably end up with Jericho. So this is the old man way. So before we go, tell everyone where they can find you.
All right, everyone can find me on Twitter at RealRobWolkin. You can find me on Forbes with writing about Spurs content. You can find me at Hoops Habit, where I'll be writing about the Toronto Raptors occasionally. I've got this whole list of stuff on YouTube now, which my YouTube name is Robert Wolkenbrod on there, where I'm covering TV shows and movies whenever they come out. And the editing service that's still in progress right now that I'm making. So I got a lot of stuff going on here, to say the least. And there could be a podcast coming at some point too. Dun, so dun, dun, dun. I got a laundry list of stuff here.
I mean, this is the perfect time to do it, man.
Yeah.
So if you look at this, Real Rob Wolken, RealRobWolken on Twitter. Make sure you follow him. He's fun. Like, honest Odin, like, I love the stuff you tweet, and it's like, you're one of the few people on Instagram who don't, you don't bash. I gotta give that to you, man. Like, you don't really go in there and just start, like, bashing people because you don't like something. Like, you give an unbiased opinion on something, and you tend to see both sides of something, but when something sucks, you're like, yeah, that was bad.
Yeah, with me, I try to play it like how it is, or I try to see things on both sides sometimes to get a full analysis of something. But I'll never go in and criticize something unless it's something so egregiously bad that I can't help it. I have fun with Twitter, and I'm trying to get to 1,000 followers too. So hey, listen to this, subscribe or follow.
Yeah, follow them. Oh, totally agreed. You mean like the Saudi Arabia thing?
Damn it, Wade!